The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
He throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues coming to you from the office in the front room of my house, Matt, and my co-host, Alex's room. Alex, how are you doing with lockdown?
I mean, it'd be interesting if we had, like, an office or a recording studio, but this is where we've always been recording, isn't it? I mean, I haven't moved. No, but, like, seriously, I'm losing my mind. I almost shaved my head last night, and my wife would absolutely kill me if I did that. I'm bored. I don't know about you. I mean, I'm in a small town over here, so there was already nothing to do. It was a half-hour drive to Cambridge to do anything, but that's all shut down, so... Yeah. I have nothing to do. I've been playing a lot of MLB The Show on PlayStation. Really just grinding away at that, you know, like FIFA Ultimate Team or whatever. There's a version in baseball, so I'm just doing that pretty much. My wife's doing a puzzle, so yeah, we don't even see each other. So it's been good. It's been good.
If anyone has any suggestions for Alex for stuff he wants to do, tweet us, the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues on RWBB pod, or on at UK _Bills, the backup Twitter for the fan group.
Yeah, you forgot your birthday, didn't you?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Forgot my birthday, and locked me out of Twitter. And it's been 3 weeks and I still got jack shit.
Thank you, Twitter, for that. Yeah.
Yes. But no, I've got my office on the go next to me. I've got my work stuff. But enough about that. Let's get on to what this podcast is all for. And we're starting off with the latest free agent signings, which is a return for the third time in a few years, EJ Gaines, and another Panther, offensive tackle, Darrell Williams. Thoughts?
Don't you think at a certain point, like, I don't know, all of the Panthers' signings is getting a little ridiculous, don't you think?
Yes.
Does they know that there's other players out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it this way. Obviously, previous seasons, there has just got to be another reason for it. But with the Panther signings are having this season, this off season, I'm looking at it. It was with this the coronavirus out there. How much of training camp and preseason games are they going to get? And if they're getting players like Williams and ex-Panthers players that have known the system previously from when McDermott was there.
They're not going to need a lot of time to learn the system, right? I guess that makes sense. That sucks. Hopefully this thing is taken care of by July. You know, there are a lot of states in America that don't have their shit together. I mean, Florida is not on lockdown. People are still out at the beach over there. So America doesn't have it together at all, so a lot of sports are absolutely in jeopardy. But I get what you're saying. Getting guys that know the systems makes everything a little bit easier. I get that. I mean, Darrell Williams is a good low-risk, high-reward player.
Yeah.
2017 Pro Football Focus, number 3 right tackle. Is he a guy that could take over for Cody Ford if Ford doesn't really work out? Is he going to be a rotational guy? How in love are the Bills with Ford? I think a big offseason training camp battle will be Darrell Williams versus Cody Ford, and I think that'll be really interesting. So, if Ford could regain his form, then there's a massive value signing right there.
Exactly, and it's again, it's what he's found in Quinton Jefferson when he signed him. It's versatility. In the pan snaps, I think I've got a stat on there. I think it was from Cover One. I think it was just for the 2019 season. Snaps by position, he had, or this could be over a couple of years, he had 169 snaps at left tackle, 409 snaps at left guard, 214 snaps at right guard, 44 snaps at right tackle. And his best side, he's got sacks surrendered by position. He's surrendered 5 sacks at left tackle, 2 at left guard, 4 at right guard, and 1 at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And pressures, which are sacks, hits, hurries, per football PFF, left tackle 13, left guard 13, right guard 7, right tackle 2. So looks like he's one of those guys that you're gonna have versatility from and can plug in if needed anywhere along that side. I mean, look at what we had with Ryan Bates. They signed him and he can play pretty much all 5 positions. You've got Feliciano and Long, they can both play guard and they can play center. Dawkins can switch out to right tackle if ever needed. You've got Inseki that can play both tackles, forward tackle and guard. It's probably what makes a team a good team, the fact that they can have those players that can play those multiple positions. So if you do go down, you've got someone serviceable, someone good to come back. And with the new CBA and the rules, they're allowed to dress an extra couple, and one's got to be another, an offensive lineman. This versatility comes in handy quite a bit.
Yeah, it's that trait has been one of the things that this regime has been looking for. We've been blessed without injuries, but when they happen, we have signed a lot of guys who could do a lot of different things and do it well, not just, you know, replacement level players. So a lot of really encouraging signs on these little signings. EJ Gaines and Josh Norman. I mean, depth at cornerback was a need, and now we have it, and it looks really good. Training camp battles, guys who are on redemption stories. It's looking like you can get a lot out of this roster, and it's just a matter of moments until Brandon Bean wins like Executive of the Year award or whatever. Does the NFL even have that, GM of the Year?
I think they did. I think we were talking about it towards the end of the season around Super Bowl time when
we were talking about McDermott for coach, but I mean, this is all. I mean, Bean has put together something almost magical, something that we haven't seen in decades. So, yeah.
It's with EG Gaines. It's versatility. He can play slot, so he can push Teron Johnson. He can play on the edge, so there's competition for Levi Wallace and Josh Norman. You could line up with your back five, Trey White, EJ Gaines, Josh Norman, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. And we know how well Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, and Trey White are, and you've got those two experienced guys.
It looks really good. I mean, having the number two cornerback battle between Levi Wallace, Josh Norman, and EJ Gaines is, I mean, those are three starters in previous seasons for different teams, all coming in and competing for one spot, and whoever is the number three is a proven starter. It's just silly how good this team is being built right now.
And it makes the draft a lot more a lot more interesting, because when we'll go on to this in a minute when we talk about the Bills' first pick in round two, or their first pick in the whole draft at pick 54, we'll talk about that in a second. But these signings and also the versatility is making this draft interesting, because people just don't know what way Bean is going to go and how his draft board is set up. Obviously, it's going to be a lot difficult for him because they can't have team visits, and they're doing people, they're Skyping, FaceTiming prospects. And it's just going to be a case of how, through what they've seen during the season and at the combine, how that board is actually going to match up to what direction they go in at 54, at 86, and so on.
Yeah, it's the team is in uncharted territory when it comes to what they can do in getting prepared for the draft. It's not something that bothers the commissioner because he's not pushing it back. So things will go as they normally will. This is definitely going to be one of those just trust your gut instinct kind of drafts for every team, pretty much. But I think especially for the Bills, because the further down in the draft you get, the less research that you've done on guys. So, yeah, I mean, what do they do with the second round pick? You know, do they target the position, or do they take the best available?
That is a question I think that most of Twitter are really, I wouldn't say confused about, really pulled in each direction.
It's the number one debate for sure.
Because I mean, I'm just looking at Jim Marino's last draft he put out just yesterday. Mm-hmm. He had let me go back to it. I'm actually on the third round pick at the moment. He had Jonathan Taylor, running back, as his first round pick.
Ugh.
I mean, you
let
also
me tell you, let me tell you, I did no research on running backs. I didn't want to. I'm so desperate for the Bills to not draft a running back in the second round. You can find one in the fourth. Go sign Devonta Freeman or Carlos Hyde. You know, I mean, we don't need to. It's a waste, I would say, to take a guy in the second round who could be a starter and only give him 50% of the reps at a position where there's high turnover. It's just, it's not worth the price tag.
Yeah, I mean,
A lot of the picks that I discussed at this position are guys who, again, contrary to what I just said, are guys that won't see the field more than 50% of the time. And I think that's more or less just a tip of the cap to Bean for building a team that already doesn't really need this pick.
Yeah, I mean, there is talk with the running backs, and obviously I want to get your opinion on that. When you listen to the rounds on the podcast, you hear them when they come running backs, is that they can be expendable. So when they get to the end of their rookie contract, you can either dump them or sign them to a massive contract, aka Ezekiel Elliott and
McCaffrey. You definitely drop them and you take another one. And unless they're like franchise defining guys like that, like faces of the franchise, because you can't lose ticket sales.
So
you can't get rid of marquee players. But if you draft guys like Devin Singletary, who are good, not great, not the face of the franchise like Ezekiel Elliott would be, you can just get another one in 3 years.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm looking at a few more on here. I'm looking at Luke Easterling from the Draft Wire. He's got the Bills going for Julian Okwara, an edge from Notre Dame, with his first round pick. I mean, is it? Do you look for edge? Do you think edge is going to be that pick? Is it with the likes of?
Yeah. I think that all signs still point to edge as the number one need for the Bills. I'd say it's like 1A edge, 1B linebacker. Because, I mean, I really don't like who we have to replace Zoe. There's not a definitive guy there. So it's either get someone in the draft or bring in Nigel Bradham. Just have him and Klein kind of, you know, rotate based off strengths and weaknesses. I think that... you know, can some of these edge guys in the draft play linebacker as well? You know, versatility, because with what we signed in free agency, if we draft an edge, they're going to be spot start players, you know, so someone like you mentioned earlier with versatility, if they could play edge and linebacker, that would be, you know, the the dream to get skill on the field on all downs, and that's the idea.
Yeah, so, I mean, but then again, you're talking about linebacker. I mean, you know that most of the time they're only going to really run with Milano and Edmonds in there. That's how most of the time they spent last year. Obviously, Alexander played on certain downs, mainly on special teams, and obviously he had that versatility. But I just can't remember the stat, and if there was a stat, that how many times they actually played the genuine 4-3,
yeah,
with the three linebackers out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that. I just, when I see a position of weakness, I want it to be filled, and that's kind of what I'm seeing. I'm still looking at this as a traditional 4-3 defense, even though maybe the snap count doesn't show that. I think it's a credit to the organization that have built such a strong roster that I need to stress to find a position of weakness.
Well, I'll probably talk a bit more about certain things in a minute. I just want to I've done a little research trying to see if there was a bit of a trend in the way that Bean has actually drafted in the last few drafts. Obviously, 2017, he came after the draft, so I'm trying to put that onto Sean McDermott. But the last two, round one and round two picks, was last year, obviously, Ed Oliver. Then they switched to the offensive side. Then 2018, we didn't have a second round. We obviously had the two first round picks. We went Allen, then Edmonds, and then 2017, which we're probably going to class as McDermott's draft rather than Doug Whaley's draft. He went defense with Trey White and then Zay Jones and Dawkins. You can kind of see from there that he has that tendency, whatever he's gone for the first round, he'll flip to the other side. So in this instance, I can't see us going at 54 for an offensive-minded player, because you're taking Stephon Diggs
being the first-round pick.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. I don't think that their draft philosophy is offense and defense or offense. I don't think it's that. I think the most important thing that the Bills are doing in terms of building this roster is focusing on positions of need and filling it with the right player. This isn't a regime that will draft C.J. Spiller in the first round when you don't need to. They're not going to take the best available player because, draft picks are, like I said, there's a price tag on there's a capital to these, draft picks, these slots.
Yeah.
If you waste it, then, that's wasted money, that's wasted talent, that's waste, everything. So they're just being real meticulous, real scientific about it. And I think that they've shown that if there's a position of need, they'll draft up for it. If there's not a position of need, then they'll trade down. There's been a lot of trade ups, but I mean, you look at the trade up for Allen and Edmonds, and you're like, yeah, those were smart moves. You look at Diggs. They didn't like the wide receivers at our pick, so they got a different one, a different style of, of move, but for that position of need. So that's why I don't think running back happens in the second round. To go along with your idea of it's probably going to be defense because they've already addressed offense so much. But they've also addressed a lot of defense in the free agency too. So I really think it's going to be 50-50. And I think that's going to come down to edge or possibly offensive tackle, even though we just signed Darrell Williams. My philosophy for picking at 54 is find an athletic guy who has some inconsistencies and use the strength of the team right now, which is depth, to iron out these guys' inconsistencies and have them be starters for next year.
Yeah. I mean, looking over what I said, trying to find trend on there, I've gone back. I even went a bit further. I went from the drafts from 2016 all the way back to 2009. I mean, some of the picks in there, especially in 2009 with Aaron Maybin, EJ Manuel, and all that, but you just can't really see a trend in there, because 2016 they went first and second round picks, they went both the defense. 2015 they went just, they didn't have a round one pick because of the Sammy Watkins trade in the previous year. They went with defense in round two, then offense, then offense, defense, offense, defense, defense. 2010 Spiller, and then Terrell Troop round two, and then again, they went Mabin, Eric Wood, 2009 in the first round, Jarius Bird and Andy Levitre in round two. So I couldn't see a pattern on this, of what you're saying could be right, that I'm probably just reading way too much into what was done previously, and that at 54, it's going to be a lottery depending on what's on his board.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you're going to get the smartest possible decision being made here. Because when you mention all those old picks, it's like, holy shit, what were they thinking? I think in a quarantine situation like we have here, we can go back and redraft old Bills drafts to see if they could have done better. Hindsight, you know, is 2020, and it'd be interesting to see if we could have built a better Bills roster back then. I spend a lot of time doing that just in my free time anyway, looking at old drafts. So
people know that I do love doing mock drafts. So round two has been interesting for me since we've actually made the Diggs pick. I mean, I don't know. I think you said it before we came on there. You're on the draft network at the moment, the mock draft machine.
Yep.
I have
not made my second round pick yet.
I mean, I'm in the same place. I'll tell you. I've got on here, I've got Ezra Cleveland, an offensive tackle from Boise State. I've got Jeremy Chinn, safety/linebacker, Southern Illinois. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, running back, LSU. Peoples Jones from Michigan, Raquan Davis, Davon Hamilton, and Jonah Jackson. They're the top.
You say Janet Jackson?
Jonah Jackson. I mean, I've even got
Cam Akers in our minds here. Okay.
I've also got Cam Akers and Jalen Johnson as well on there, but I don't know if yours is similar to mine.
Top of the board for me is Terrell Lewis, edge out of Alabama. I think that's the sexy pick. Jeremy Chinn is well available. Wide receiver could be a possibility. KJ Hamler, a little bit small, but Lucas Niang, the offensive tackle, TCU. Some of the guys that I like in this situation, Terrell Lewis,
is
injury risk coming off of an injury, but he's a player that coaches love. He has all the physical tools and just needs to work on his football IQ. I think that, like I mentioned earlier, the theme of my choices here will be players that are a project that don't need to really start and be impact in year one. The offensive tackle out of TCU, Lucas Niang, he's a Deion Dawkins comparable, needs to work on his footwork. If Cody Ford isn't the answer, this guy could be. And then Peoples Jones. If we're thinking John Brown, his time is with the Bills is limited. Peoples Jones could be the starter across from Diggs next year. How amazing would that be? You got a guy with size, good hands, athletic. He needs to just work on being consistent, and he can do that as the number four, you know? Mm. And then probably last, I would say, is Curtis Weaver, edge out of Boise State. Here's a guy who put up numbers. Second highest pressure rate since 2018 of all the pass rushers available in the draft this year. His only downside is he played at Boise State. There's not a lot of top competition he's going against there. But so I really think that if it comes down, it's like Lewis or Weaver and Peoples Jones is what I would consider. And I know that my board does show Cam Akers as well, but Brandon Ayuk even. I'm just not considering Cam Akers at all, even though there's value there. I mean, not the pick, but just, you know, he's a talented guy. I just don't care. Michael Pittman Jr. as well, another notable. Kyle Duggar, safety nickel DB kind of player. I think in our last mock draft, we took Damon Arnett here, didn't we? But I don't think we...
Yes. I believe we did.
Yeah, we did that. So, yeah, we don't need to do that now, even though, I think that the guys, I don't think that EJ Gaines or Josh Norman will be the number two DB next year. So maybe you take a guy like that and just let him stew. A lot of really, really good, smart opportunities here. And if they go running back, I might quit.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, let's say I struggle each time I get to that pick. I struggle to actually feel which one we actually would go for. Because let's say every position pretty much has its own reason why they should go at 54. I mean, obviously, running back maybe not so much, but you never know. But then the offensive line, yes, we've got all five back. We've signed, we've obviously got Nseki. We've signed Daryl Williams. We've got Spencer Long back. We've got Ryan Bates and Ike Botka as well. But the likes of Ezra Cleveland, a younger version of Ty Nseki, maybe get him, stash him as your number eight on the roster if you get him. I mean, he's got light feet. He's got decent length. Just needs to work obviously on his IQ and his hand technique. But even looking inside to like Matt Hennessy, who's just outside the board for me, who can play both guard and center, again, it's the versatility. I think he needs to work on his power a little bit more and the way he blocks, but you can even make sense to actually go for an offensive lineman in that first pick, because you've got the likes of Feliciano, who's into his 30s. You've got Spencer Long, which I think he's, what, 29, 30 at the moment. Spain's about 28.
Williams is only 28. So, I mean, offensive linemen can go till 34. So I think that we have time with these guys. But, you know, I don't think it wouldn't hurt to get, you know, a nice project for the future. It just depends on what you want out of the number two pick. Do you want someone who could play now? But then again, what position needs that? And, you know, second, I mean, it's so weird because, like, every year we're like, all right, so the first, second, third, and fourth round, we're going to get all starters. This is great. But now we don't really need that. And it's kind of weird because I don't know how to treat the second round pick, because I'm so used to it being we need to get a proven 100% snap count guy. But I think right now we don't. So what do? Do you trade down? I mean, you know, it's very interesting.
I mean, I like if I was to go, if you were to nail me down a pick on for that 54th,
yeah,
I would probably, and I'm just looking at my board to see other boards are different. I would actually probably go with Jeremy Chinn. He's a safety linebacker prospect. Yes, he's from Southern Illinois, a small school, but he's got that ability to play that nickel role, and with that promotion and, you know, that staffing addition of I can never remember his name, he's moved to nickel coach, I can see this guy who can play both coverage and up in the box. I can see that
he's a hybrid guy, so I mean, something to be able to, you know, talk to that versatility skill set.
I can see him actually coming in. He doesn't have to start straight away. Yeah. People say then that's a wasted pick at 54. But he can come in on situational and rotational plays, build him up, and then you can decide whether you're gonna keep him at safety and have him as the replacement along with Jaquan Johnson for Hyde and Poyer when they eventually move on, or even try and transition him into that nickel role, to play nickelback.
Now, do you think the players, like the current players on the Bills roster, do you think they pay attention and they start to worry or wonder when a pick comes in? Because I really want to draft Donovan Peoples-Jones here, but do you think that would piss off John Brown or Cole Beasley?
To be honest, I don't think it'll piss them off. I think it'll probably piss off the likes of Foster, McKenzie, Duke Williams.
Well, I don't care about those guys because they're not going to be big time contributors. So I'm not too worried about hurting their feelings. They know that they're roster bubble guys. They're going to come out and ball as hard as they can, and if they make it, great. But I'm really looking. I think with two, I'm looking to the future, and I'm thinking, long term, because we have the setup now. But I think that it could be better, and I think next year will really benefit from this draft pick. I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I was John Brown, I
said for Terrell Lewis or like Curtis Weaver, though, because I mean, when Jerry Hughes is done, put that guy in, you know. So I really think it really needs to be edge or wide receiver here, I think.
Well, that's who Matt Parrino in his latest one actually went for, 54. He went Curtis Weaver. I mean, yeah. he let's see what his description was. It says, when it comes to pressurizing the quarterback, only one player in college football did it more consistently in the last two seasons than edge rusher, Curtis Weaver. Bills add bulk along the defensive line, but their top three edge defenders are all over 30. Weaver's a player that can come in and rush on a low snap count and possibly make a big first-year impact on defensive line that's been restocked.
The kid's legit, 6'3", 265. I mean, he's Draft Network is saying, he's a player that opposing teams must account for. I think that's really interesting. If you're really looking at a rotation on the defensive line, if you're accounting for Hughes possibly taking a big step backwards this year, this could be your fill-in. So you could have that. I think the more we talk, the more I'm leaning towards edge compared to wide receiver. I just like the flashy pick, and I think wide receiver is the more flashy pick.
Yeah, I mean on your one,
fancy football, really, but
yeah. On your one, I would even say Terrell Lewis as well. I mean, he can play. He has played stand-up linebacker. He has played edge. So he is almost your rookie, your raw Lorenzo Alexander. But yeah, I mean, I would love for us to go for Peoples Jones in there. Because I mean, then you have your top four wide receivers of Brown, Diggs, Beasley, Peoples-Jones. You got Dawson Knox in there as well. That's
fine. Hey, find a way to trade back up into the second. You know, do whatever you have to. Maybe get the edge and the wide receiver, you know? I mean, even if it's Michael Pittman Jr. or something like that.
I mean, I cannot see us. I've said this on numerous occasions to people I chat to on Twitter about it. I don't see the Bills having seven draftees come the end of the draft. I can see us ending up with four, maybe five, most likely four draft picks.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense for the fact that, you know, to sound like a broken record, but this roster is nearly complete and we don't need all those picks. So if we can really consolidate them and move them to get talent more than depth, I think that would be the best and smartest thing to do.
Yeah, so on your draft board then, nail down your 54th pick.
Curtis Weaver.
Okay, me, I'm going Jeremy Chinn.
I remember when we first started talking about draft, you were like obsessed with taking a safety, a hybrid safety linebacker nickel guy. I think you're crazy, but you know, if you're right and he plays and he's good, then all the credit to you. But right now, I just don't like that idea. But that's the fun part.
Exactly.
Listeners, who do you prefer?
Stick a tweet out there. Give us your versions. So we'll stick that on there. I think next episode, we're not going to do every single episode going up to the draft, but next episode we'll just work on our second pick, so our round three pick. So we go it on this.
Yep.
So we'll go based on what we've got, what we've selected. So we'll keep an eye on that. And then next week we'll run the mock draft again with the selection we had at 54, and then we'll discuss on the on pick three, and obviously give everyone our opinions on the on direction we go.
I'm thinking kicker.
I'm thinking punter.
Yes. Let's just go full Raiders. Absolutely. All right. So, yeah, we'll talk about that next show, all right?
Yeah, so obviously we still want your interactions with us. So
now more than ever is a really good opportunity for us to have a really good dialogue going on this. So
yeah,
we all have time. So we'll see you on Twitter. We'll see you on Facebook. We'll see you on Instagram. Let's talk about the draft and what the Bills need.
Yeah, so next week we will do the Bills' third round pick. The week after we will do let's put it out here. We'll do a mailbag. We'll get everyone listening, send your questions in, send your mock drafts in. In a couple of weeks' time we'll go through your mock drafts, we'll go through your questions, whether it be draft or free agency. Then the episode before the draft, we'll both do a live mock draft with trades on there, and obviously that'll lead us directly up to the draft. So that's what you've all got to look out for and look forward to in the upcoming episodes.
Yeah, we'll talk to you then.
You got anything else to do? Anything else to say? Or am I going to end this show?
I absolutely have nothing to do after this. We could talk forever, but I don't think that anybody wants to listen to a 3-hour podcast. So I'm going to go back. I might take a nap. I don't know. It's almost 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll walk the dog, you know, maybe start drinking early. I don't know. Whatever.
So remember, if anyone got any ideas for what Alex can do whilst in isolation and lockdown.
But here's what I want. Put this on the Twitter. Give me a good. Now I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to like TV and movies and stuff like that. I only like good stuff, you know. So I'm not asking for EastEnders here. Give me a good British TV show to watch. I really love Luther, so have that be your starting point. I know about Broadchurch. What's new out there that I could watch on a box set? Let me know.
We'll put that on Twitter. So for this time until the next episode, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Keep subscribing, leave us that review, follow us on @RWBB_pod for the podcast Twitter and @UK_Bills for the group Twitter, and stay safe whilst we're in lockdown, and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us. Not us.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are. Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.